Okay, my name is Annalise Finney. I'm recording this interview for the Oral History Summer School's Education Narratives Project. Today is December 3rd, 2020. I am in Oakland, California, and I'm recording this interview remotely via Zoom. I'm here with Jennifer Weiland-Strodel. And Jennifer is the director and founder of the Liberi School. So to get started, Jennifer, can you tell me a little bit about what has happened in the last 3 months of your life since we last spoke with you for this project?
That's such an interesting question. For the last 3 months of my life, I have been at home, which is sort of different. So when you ask that question, I'm not sure how to approach it or answer it. Just in the physical sense, you know, we haven't seen in person people outside of our own household. And my household is my husband and my two children and our pets, our animals. I go for outdoor mass walks with people, but not very often. That's sort of something that happens every now and then. And then in terms of the Liberi School, I can't remember our last interview, what date it was, but I did talk about our plans to launch it as a virtual learning community. And so that launch has gone forward in the last 3 months as well. So we've begun on that journey.
Wow. So where are you? How do you remember at what point when you launched that, just to get a sense of how long it's been?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we launched it September, mid-September. And we launched it with, core curriculum offerings for children in an early learning program, which is pre-kindergarten to first grade. And then early elementary program, which is second grade to fourth grade. And then we have a middle school program, which is fifth to seventh grade. And so we started that in September, and the core curriculum offerings are in the areas of mathematics, writer's workshop, language and literary studies, and historical inquiry and scientific inquiry. So those are the sort of covering the core curriculum of education, you know. And then we also have studio art, and we have electives. So we have filmmaking workshop, studio art workshop, and Spanish class, and more. You know, we're in development of different kinds of enrichment and elective online courses that we can offer. And we really have a vision of building a new kind of learning community that is 100% virtual, but doesn't look like anything that anyone else is experiencing in terms of virtual and remote learning right now. I say that because from my understanding, a lot of the online learning programs, I mean, the majority of them, and of course there's many programs I'm not aware of, but they rely more on kind of a very preset curriculum. And often that's, ed tech developed curriculum. And they also, otherwise it's sort of in-person schools who are using remote learning as a way to reach their learners until they can get back into person. And that translates very differently because, as you can imagine, it's a different experience for both the teacher, the design, the curriculum design, and the students. So we're excited about what's happening because it is very sort of new and innovative, and I really see these possibilities that are sort of emerging, and it's exciting. It's an exciting adventure because it's like kind of charging down a path that we don't know what it looks like yet, you know. It's and that's exciting, and that's how it was when I started the in-person Liberi School in 2015. I really was so excited about and passionate about this sort of really challenging conventional mainstream models of education. And what I was seeing is that even whether it's private or public, there are sort of certain structures and tenets that we as a culture and society have become just really entrenched in. Mm. And I really questioned why. And then when I started questioning why that was, you know, what answer didn't come up was because it's the most dynamic, engaging, responsive, appropriate way to be teaching our children in the context of the world that they're living in now. A lot of them are tenets of the past. Mm-hmm. And like when I'm talking about tenets, I'm talking about things like graded classrooms, age segregated classrooms, even school buildings, the physical architecture of schools where you have large buildings with corridors and closed doors and desks lined up and teacher standing in the front of the classroom, you know, right? And then of course the issue of standardized testing and even giving grades to students, just a lot developed, like the idea that children have a expected developmental time that they're going to master these skills, when we all know that that happens, you know, progressively, and we can give sort of large frameworks for that, but in terms of individual students, it doesn't work to try and fit students into those standards. So just those, when I'm referring to like these tenets that I was questioning, those are some examples. Even just when I had an in-person school, even it was just like the idea that there's, you know, an expectation that there's one adult in the room with the class. And I just thought as a teacher, it's so much more impactful. And the experience for me of teaching is very different when I have another adult or colleague in the room with me, and the ideas sort of just bounce back and forth, and we catch things, and we, you know, it's we bear witness to the what's happening, the teaching and learning in the classroom. It's really dynamic. So there was a lot, you know, I could go on and on, that, you know, that led to the birth and the manifestation of the Libri School in person. And so when COVID happened and we were shut down and we went virtual, it was like, you know, brand new and just kind of like trying it for the first time. And a lot of it, you know, didn't work. And then some of it really did work. But what I was really seeing was in the context of where we're at now in the world, there was so much more potential from my perspective as an educator to actually just sort of rip off the Band-Aid and kind of look reality in the face, as hard and painful as it was, like grief-stricken, and say, you know, for now, the way forward in terms of creating a joyful learning environment is virtually, a safe learning environment. Because what I saw, which is being played out in the experiences of the people I know who are either teaching or learning in person, is that there's this incredible anxiety and whiplash and uncertainty involved in the opening and closing of classrooms, the very chaotic scheduling of cohorts, and then, you know, the like I had referred to earlier, the hybrid teaching model where, you know, some of your classmates are online only, some are coming in a few days a week. Teachers, you know, there's different applications of hybrid, which is, you know, some teachers are teaching an in-person classroom to a screen so that they can reach the remote classmates, so that the kids who are actually in person are actually watching the teacher teach to a screen instead of actually being in, moving around the classroom with them. And then plus the physical safety and the health. And if we want to talk about what's happening currently, it's December 3rd. Mm-hmm. And in the US, there's like, I think today it was over 3,000 deaths. So there's, like, I sort of got me emotional, and I, I think that there's also, like, for me as an educator, this very, what was very difficult for me personally to let go of the in-person school. I felt like it was like, I was necessary to be realistic. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that I feel like there's a lot of denial going on in this country about how to stop the spread, and that, you know, even, and I think schools are doing a good job who are bringing in, like, I mean, there's definitely a lot of protocols in place and everything. And so it's, you know, it's happening that people are coming in and they're keeping each other as safe as possible. And I guess I was kind of more needing to go in the zero, like, no risk as opposed to mitigated risk, just because I guess I felt like I'm not the principal of, you know, a public school. I'm not the principal of a private school with, like, a board of directors and all this. It was like, it was my project, the Libri school. And so it would be me taking personal responsibility for the health and lives of all my teachers and all my students and all their parents and all their grandparents. And, you know, it just, to me, it was like, I don't know, it was very clear that there was going to be a lot to wrestle with if we were continuing in person. And then just on a pedagogical level, I just really believe that I couldn't ask teachers to take all of that on personally and professionally and still do their best work teaching pedagogically. And I'm so interested in that aspect of education, like, really kind of like always being alive and engaged in the questions of, is what we're doing reaching kids and how they're responding? And, like, let's not just phone it in or, you know, do the same thing over and over again and not actually respond to the child that's in front of you. I was actually when I was in grad school, really inspired by Reggio Emilia approach and some of the writing around that. And one of my professors is really steeped in that movement. And I know that it was, you know, born out of early childhood education, but so much of the thinking around it for me applies, you know, to all ages. But one idea that really struck me from some of my study in that approach was just that you really, as an educator, you really have to teach the child that's in front of you. You know, like, you're not applying. So, yeah, all of that led me to think about the world as it is now, not as it was, either 100 years ago, 200 years ago, or pre-COVID, and really kind of respond and try and create something that can help children continue to thrive and grow and be happy and feel safe and engage in their deep learning. And I saw that while difficult and like a transition for everyone, having the kids at home, you know, wasn't a bad thing ultimately for, you know, for a lot of families. Of course, for some kids and families, it's incredibly difficult, but there's also a lot of families that this experience has really changed them as a family. We used to live in a way where there was so much separation between parents and children. And once children became school aged, it was almost like you were turning your parenting relationship over and your child over to a school. You know, there, and education became, it became more than just teaching and learning, in terms of education. Like, I want to be clear that I understand, and it's not just academics that I'm interested. It's also the social emotional, learning and just worldview and all of that development. But I think the way we were as a society was like even more so than, for example, Mexico, where I met my husband, or in Northern Italy, where Reggio Emilia came, there was such a separation once your children became school age, to sort of turn your children over to a school, and you would be very careful about what school you chose, but you turn your child over to the school, and then so much of the rest of that child's experience and upbringing and values get cultivated in the context of that school. Whereas we're all in this very different experience and world now. And I think one of the silver linings is that separation can sort of start dissolving, and parents are becoming have to become more engaged. And I know it's really a struggle, but on the other hand, there's also something that can develop that's really beautiful, I think. It's my hope that we as a society embrace this like newfound connection with your family. And I do hear that with like a lot of families who parents had to work, had never considered working from home before, but have realized that they can achieve their goals and do their job effectively from home. And once they've figured out the ways to make that work, they really don't want to go back to the office. And, you know, a lot of the reason why is because they just love the time they get to spend with their children, and that they have, and they also love, you know, vice versa, they love having their children at home with them. They love not having to say goodbye every morning at 7:30 and not see them until, you know, 4, but realistically most kids were involved in after school activities and that kind of thing too. So I guess with Libri, we're trying to envision sort of an alternative way of educating your children that is sort of responding and kind of growing in that soil, I guess. Yeah.
I'm very curious, what does that mean for your daily life right now? Like, what does your day look like when you wake up in the morning to when you go to bed at night?
Well, when I wake up in the morning, my daily life, my two children we did our programming so we could include West Coast kids potentially.
Nice.
Yeah. So basically our virtual core curriculum is 3 hours of classes a day, live classes a day. And so it starts at 11, their virtual schooling starts at 11:30 to 12:30. And then we have a lunch break from 12:30 to 1:30. And then they have class from 1:30 to 2:30, and then 2:30 to 3:30. And then sometimes there's stuff afterwards. So we wake up in the morning and there's, you know, coffee and breakfast. And then sort of like a day, there's the four of us and we just spend every day together, really. And in the morning, the kids, we might do some work, like light schoolwork around, you know, reading, word work. Check my emails and, you know, do the work stuff. And then we might go for a walk in the morning or exercise. But we really actually spend the morning as a family together. And then they go off to their classes, and then I do more work at my desk. And then in the afternoon, usually when they're off of class, I'm still usually working past 3:30. And the kids do their thing, you know, whatever, they practice guitar, they write, they do, you know, they do what they kids do, they ride their bikes. Maybe there's time for a walk also in the afternoon. And then is that music too loud in the background?
It's a little loud. Is it possible to turn it down a little bit?
If you just hold one second.
Yeah, sure. Go for it. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. But so I don't know how it is for you, but we can Any of those are fine.
Okay, I'll ask her. Maybe I'll just move up to the bedrooms of the new one we don't have to worry about.
Hi, sorry about that. I don't know if you can pause the recording, but I just want to address, I won't talk about the interview, but they're just watching something, and so they didn't turn up the volume or anything, but like it kind of like the volume okay. Just script. So
stay there.
Are you sure? Okay, they said they were gonna just move or something. I guess the other option is I could just go up to my bedroom and that'd be fine too.
I think it was fine before, and so it might have just been like a loud moment. So I think
yeah, that's what it was. But yeah, okay.
Yeah. All right, I'll let you know if it's like disruptive.
Okay.
Thank you for checking that. but you were in the middle of answering the question about your daily life, and you were saying.
Oh yeah, yeah. So cool. Yeah, in the afternoon. So you know, we do our thing in the afternoon. But I'm usually working later. Then they're finished school. My 7-year-old still takes a nap every afternoon. So he goes off to his nap. And then it's like kind of just cooking dinner and spending more family time together. And then going to bed. Yeah, like cooking dinner, you know, doing cooking dinner, cleaning the dishes, that kind of thing. So it's like a really quiet life.
Yeah. How has that transition felt to you personally?
Personally, I love it. Yeah. I feel like every day grateful to have this time to spend with my family and to have this quiet life. I'm just personally as a personality, I really love the quiet life. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, like I guess when I say the quiet life, I mean like the pace. And yeah. I miss seeing people. I miss so much about community, you know, feeling part of community and gatherings and having people in my life in an in-person way. I miss so much the community of you know, getting to spend a day in a big building with multi-age group of kids. You know, I miss that all the time. But I don't see this as anything less to be grateful for. Like this time, this precious time with my family. I think that I hear with everyone I speak to, but I think it's something that's very difficult to put to words or pin down. But I do experience it in my own life and believe that this quiet time, this time has actually allowed a lot of people to sort of become, I guess what it is that it's kind of forced them to become reflective, self-reflective and reflective of larger questions in the world. And I don't think anyone really feels at this point they have any answers. But I think that kind of incredible long period of reflection that we've all gone through as a country, but just even globally as a human species, is an important time. And I guess my hope is that that this time kind of results in some changes, actions, shifts that sort of create a more sustainable and hopeful future, and one that's more respectful of human relationships and time, and more respectful of simply just living and being, as opposed to like pushing forward and running around and consuming and sort of. I don't know, I feel like as a society, we were just like this like high speed bulldozer of a society that just kept on like needing to consume more and just move faster and so I'm hoping that maybe we'll question that a little bit more deeply and ask ourselves, like, you know, how do we want to set up our lives? And I'm from Canada. I was born and raised from Canada, and then I came to the United States for undergraduate college, and then right after college, I actually went traveling a lot and backpacked and taught in different places, and then eventually came back and ended up in New York City, and then migrated up to the Hudson Valley. But what I do know is that this high speed way of life is definitely, you know, definitely has a strong American kind of flavor to it. And I guess like, you know, there's parts of America, like California, they say is more laid back, or the South, but it's kind of like, I think a cultural or social values sort of thing. But like, for example, I know in Mexico, when we were living in Mexico, it was just, there was such people, you know, it was, your job was your job. You worked to be able to provide for your family and, you know, and also just be part of society. And, but it was so much less important than your relationships, your family, and also just being, just literally like walking down the street and talking to other people, or, and I think that, oh. I'm hoping maybe COVID will have an impact on us and realize, like, oh, why? Like, why? What are we why have we sacrificed all of this? And what for? And I think even like in the idea, you know, I know this is an education narrative. So like for me, thinking about schools, like what are you sacrificing? Like, I guess I would ask of educators, parents, you know, us as a society, administrators, like what do you want school to provide? What are you sacrificing in this current school, in the structures that we identify as school now? And you know, like what concessions, what sacrifices, what damage are you willing to accept, not only on your child's well-being, but on the structures of family, the time, the precious time of family life, the loss of impact as a parent, in order to, you know, what's the exchange? What do you want from school? And are there other ways to do it? And also just honestly, like where do you want to spend your time? Like we have the virtual school is so focused and the kids are at home that like, they get so much done in 3 hours, you know. You take out all the transitions and the commute, and it's like the workers who have gone to the office, and some of them spent 3 hours a day in a commute, and now they realize like, oh, I'm not gonna give up my life like that, you know. I guess I'm still in that phase of really sort of saying, like, trying to tell people like, hey, like there are possibilities here. Let's, you know, let's imagine. That's what I'm really excited about and big about, is like, let's like visualize and imagine and realize that this can be kind of awesome.
Yeah. I had a commute before this and now I don't. And I definitely don't want to go back to having one. And I'm curious how the teachers and the school community that you oversee is responding to this transition. Are you finding that they are kind of in a similar place to you, or what kind of questions have been coming up from?
Oh yeah, well so when I closed the Libri School in person, we made it. It was a total pivot. It wasn't like oh, you know, everyone stay enrolled in the Libri School and then now we're doing it this way instead. We actually made the announcement and we closed, and then kind of re-envisioned and relaunched. So basically whoever is signed up has signed up for like the virtual learning program. So that's great because everyone who signed up is, you know, there intentionally. I think that's a very sort of critical piece about virtual learning is that it's or what we're doing with virtual learning is like, it's very much not, we are not trying to do something that's just the hold over band-aid. We're trying to create something that, you know, that people want it because of the flexibility, because of the focus. And I think that too, what, you know, in virtual learning, there was like my daughter who's 12, and cares a lot about what her peers think about her. You know, I've noticed her be able to just immerse in her own learning in a very different way, because in virtual it's you're not so self-conscious and you're not, you kind of decouple a lot of those social pressures but the learning is social because it's collaborative, and we the way our classes are run is that they're very discussion driven. They're small classes, discussion driven, you know, really like emergent curriculum in the sense that, you know, what the children show interest in, we kind of really run with, so that they're motivated. It's social, emotional, and collaborative learning, but it's different than the social pressures of, you know, of just like what you imagine in a typical you know, middle school classroom.
Yeah.
And so the community is, you know, a community of teachers and learners that have just signed up to this new vision. So they're kind of, you know, they're intentionally there, and so they're it's going really well. The teachers are having a lot of success and fun, and also appreciative that it's like we went in to this, you know. And so we have Brendan, who came from the Libri school. He's the fifth to seventh grade teacher, and he was at in-person Libri. So when we switched over, he was like, yeah, I'm like on board, I love the vision, and you know, I want to do this, and also was really excited about innovating and seeing what it meant to teach virtually intentionally, you know, for the whole year, as opposed to just being like a bridge. And then our early childhood program teacher Elizabeth and our early elementary program teacher Ali were also, like, we found them over the summer. And they actually live I mean, that's the other thing that I love, and it's part of the vision of the virtual learning community, is that the geographical freedom is exciting to me. That can, so we have teachers who are living in different parts of the country. So Elizabeth lives in Connecticut, and Ali lives in New York State, but on Long Island.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they're excited, and so they've been really enjoying this new way of approaching, you know, and creating community online and exploring it. And with early childhood, that's you know, definitely, you know, it's just totally, you can't ask a child to sit in, you know, young early childhood, to sit in front of the screen for that long. And so Elizabeth is so, you know, intentional about building community, knowing the developmental, you know, like what to expect from them developmentally, and knowing the tools that she has at hand. And what she's been really excited about was, and it's all about creating community, and what she's been really excited about was, you know, just right off the bat, the way we describe our program, you know, in the description is like, this is an early learning program, and it's going to involve the parents, and you know, so the parents are very involved in that program. And for me, that's like a huge opportunity for parents, because when you have early childhood, especially in the early childhood years, you are still, as a parent, so, even if you're not an educator, you are so connected to your child and their learning process. Mm-hmm. And before you ever sent them anywhere, you were connected, you know, like from infancy, it's sort of just the transition into school age, right? So these parents have this opportunity to be involved in a very intimate way with their child learning in that program, and Elizabeth works with them, and they do, and the parents and the children do projects together. And then, you know, as the children are learning to read, Elizabeth does reading and direct reading instruction, but she also works with the parents for to help them understand how to support that in a way. So I feel like we're giving the parents just this great foundation for them to be able to be fully engaged in their child's education. You know, it's a great setup for them to be involved in their child's education. And then, and one thing Elizabeth told me about the early learning program that was really wonderful was that she was so surprised at how early it didn't take long until, like, you know, when she logged off one day, one of the kids, you know, he's 5 years old, he's like, bye, love you, you know. And it was like, it's just, it's the same, they're still little, you know, they're still kindergartners, and she's their teacher. And, you know, he might not have met her in person yet. And he, you know, he might not, she lives in Connecticut, and he lives, he actually, Ben lives in Florida. So Ben lives in Florida, and Elizabeth, his teacher Elizabeth, lives in Connecticut, but, like, she's his teacher, and they see each other on Zoom classes, and they share, and they build relationship and connection, and she's teaching him how to read, and he loves her. It's so beautiful, you know. And she, and it's also wonderful because one thing that is really nice too is that you know, Ben gets to see her at her home. You know, she teaches out of her home office, so that there's, like, it's sort of like the way teachers set up, they sort of set up so that the background screen has, you know, the feel of, like, you've logged into class, right? But at the same time, you know, she can talk about her life and her daughter. She's got a young daughter. The teacher has a young daughter who's 2 years old. And you know, the kids are like, it's not some separation too of, like, you know, usually you, I remember being in school, and if I saw my teachers outside of school on the street, like, shopping on the weekend, my mind couldn't compute. It was just like, crazy, they're people, wait, they have lives, you know, like, what if they belong in the classroom, what are they doing on the street? And so this is just sort of a different, you know, it's kind of wonderful. And then Allie, who's in this middle, in the early elementary, she's very outside of teaching, she's very deeply involved in theater and art, and so she's just having just the most creative experience, you know, with her, you know, with her group, and just doing amazing things, inviting scientists in to be interviewed, and, you know, and of course setting it all up so it's very scaffolded and guided, and using Google Earth to sort of do these wild explorations of the world, in which the children kind of make these project books of places they've visited, and drawing, like, you know, monuments and natural landforms that they visited on Google Earth, and just doing a lot where it's, again, all about community. It's the same kind of philosophy and values and pedagogy that we had at the Libre School in the classroom, which is kind of essentially like progressive education, hands-on learning, all, you know, but it's acknowledging that we have these new tools that are readily available, and how do we use them in a way that is exciting and engaging, and there's a lot of learning going on, and not in a way that clicks the, like, that's what I saw what didn't work in the spring. And I think what a lot of the industry and schools have kind of leaned into, just because it's easy, is that, you know, that CAN curriculum where you have the tools and you can, like, ding, 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 or that kind of thing. And, like, to me, that's not what we're, it's, for us, it's much more about acknowledging that, okay, Zoom isn't the same as being in person. But at the other side of that camera is still, like, a really amazing human being on both, you know, on both sides, like, just this interview I'm having with you now. And that hasn't changed. So, you know, that's the way we teach and learn, and hopefully after COVID there'll be opportunities for all of, you know, it's sort of like,
I'm so curious that in a transition like that, there must be some things that don't go very well, that are tried in one way, it's realized doesn't work, and something else is tried and perhaps that's more successful. And I'm curious What's an example of something that you had to figure out since starting this new iteration of the school?
I think that the big thing from my perspective is figuring out how to, the interactions that happen incidentally in transition, and where you kind of, I think that's what's really hard to recreate, that we want to recreate. You know, we want these children to have Libri is very much about multi-age learning communities. And so we want to have children to have that multi-age learning communities and relationships with each other and everything like that, which in person, that happened at the snack table, at the lunch table, just in the morning drop off and pick up and just throughout the day. And, you know, you're all in the same building together, and it wasn't like separated by hallways or whatever. So when you're in doing the virtual, those moments have to be they're scheduled, you know, like, so it does. So I guess, I don't know. It's like, that is the thing that hard to recreate, and trying to figure out how do we do that. So we've done events, we definitely do presentations, and where kids share work with each other. But that's something that we're still trying to figure out how to continue, how to really sort of build and that weave so that it becomes more organic, and it's these children get to have more of a, feel like they're part of more of a larger social group, and that they can interact and learn and be with each other, even if they're not in this specific class with each other. Mm. And then, there were some technical issues at the very beginning, but minor ones. We set my daughter, and we were really excited, and we set up this beautiful classroom for them, and my son had a desk and my daughter had a desk, on other side of the room or whatever, and logged on for the first day of school. And it was, so then we realized that the room we set it up in was not great internet connection, that's our bad. So we have to either find a booster or, there's that kind of technical thing. And then also that it was the background noise of her being in class and then him being in class was just a little distracting. So we were kind of trying to figure out, you might experience this with doing oral history interviews, but we're trying to figure out, trying to research and be is there telephone operator headsets with the directional mics? Will a directional mic work? So, there's those technical things that were how do we figure that piece out? I'm just trying to think of other examples of, in kindergarten, in the early learning program, the teacher couldn't log on to class one day. So she pre-recorded videos and had the kids watch the videos and do a little bit of work in between. And the kids, when they came back, she was sort of, they were like, they hated the videos. They're like, oh, we didn't like the videos. And then she also found out that the parents kind of just played them all the videos back to back kind of thing. And she was sort of like, it wasn't really supposed to, not supposed to be watched everyone back to back. And more like, watch this video, do a little activity, then watch the next one. But then on the other hand, she said that then there was another day in the semester that she also had to do the same thing. And then she told me that the second time around, the kids were more into the videos, because I think maybe it was just the newness of it. So there's things, but everyone's adjusting. I'm just trying to think of other examples. Are you curious about sort of in the interactions of the teachers and students? Are you interested in the administrative kind of founder role? You mean like the launching role of like the school vision, or like, you mean like the nitty gritty?
I guess, I mean, things that you have, like that you personally have had to figure out just in your role in the school.
Oh, well, I've had to figure out, like, I'm still figuring it all out. I mean, for me, the biggest thing was, continues to be marketing, how to get the vision out there, how to communicate what we're doing. I think that's, you know, it's an interesting question, because it's like everything we're doing is unseen. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, cause it's, everyone's in their home and the Zoom classes happen, and then it's, you know, there's not an actual location that people can come and visit and see. So it's sort of, you know, it's interesting, cause it's like, how do you reach, how to reach people and help them understand what you're up to, is, I think that's a major piece of figuring that out. Which was different for me, because it's totally different than with the in-person. It was just like word of mouth, local community, you know, and so that's really, really different. So I have no experience and for example, I can't stand social media, and like prior to COVID, I have to say I had Facebook really at the beginning of Facebook, because being from Canada, being from Toronto, my childhood girlfriends from my elementary school in Canada kind of started it up as a way to catch up with people. And that was like before it hit the radar in America. So they sent me an invitation. They're like, try this new thing out. Because it was kind of bigger in Toronto for some reason. And so I joined then to sort of catch up with girlfriends, but it wasn't something that I was active on. And not something, I'm just not into it. And with the Libri school in person, it was something I really resisted, and I wanted to just go kind of word of mouth, grassroots, local community, and not put ourselves out there in social media or even just like advertising. And now in this iteration and in the context that, we're in now, I'm realizing like, wow, I still have to say, like, I can feel my resistance to it, because I haven't jumped in. But I think I'm grappling with the question of like, wow, it really is seeming to be the way to communicate at this point. So I guess that's an open question for me, because I am still very resistant to social media and skeptical of it, but I guess I'm trying to find a way to communicate. I guess that's the big challenge, is how is in the context of this time, how do we communicate? And then in the context of the school and the vision I have, which is one that isn't tied to like one geographical location. How do I communicate that in that broader way? And that's an unanswered question.
Yeah. Sounds very good.
Yeah.
I just wanted to point out that we're coming up to an hour, but I have one more question I want to ask before we wrap up. And the question that I have is, where are you finding support for yourself and inspiration during this time? Because there's so much change happening in your life and in your professional world. Where do you look to find kind of support when you need it, or inspiration when you're feeling like the well is dry?
Yeah. A lot of places, I think that one thing I've noticed is that I'm really kind of trying to lean into a lot of things that I quote unquote never had time for before, in terms of that kind of, support. So I've gotten, I have my immediate family where they support me so much, and I try and support them, as well. So we really try and keep that family, well, kind of like the major source of buoyancy in this time. And then outside of that, I have, set up, not me personally, but my family at birth have come together and set up ever since the beginning of the pandemic an ongoing Sunday afternoon Zoom call. My parents were divorced when I was in college, and it was a really like painful divorce. Mm-hmm. And actually since the divorce, we haven't, other than weddings and funerals, we haven't, there's four children in my birth family, and we haven't been together with my father, like four children together with my father since the divorce, except for like the wedding funeral every now and then. But now every week we have this great family Zoom meeting with my dad and the four kids and the grandkids, and then we do it back to back with my mom. So it has to be separate because they're still not there yet. they can't get on a Zoom together yet. But that has been a sense of support and new. Like that is definitely something that's come up, and it's a like newfound relationship with my family in this stage. And then also I've been like getting in touch with old friends a lot, and even old friends that who live in Canada, for example, or I've even had like started relationships with people who I wasn't even like, there's this girl who I went to school with. We have set up this weekly Zoom call that we just talk to each other and are kind of developing a new friendship over Zoom. I went to school with her. She was in my grade, but we were never friends while we were at school. But she read a short story of mine. I'm also a writer, a fiction writer, and it really moved her. And she reached out to me. And from that, we said, let's catch up. And then our catch up was so much fun and so supportive that we like have that regular. And then my girlfriends from college, you know, so it's that kind of thing. I think that in a lot of ways, I'm in more regular communication with close friends that live far away from me, that aren't in my local community, than I was prior. And that's been a lot of support. And yeah. And then things like this, like I love the listening parties and for this. And I also joined this weekly webinar with like kind of education innovators, like you're kind of trying to like take apart the system, and you know, that's always inspiring for me, and talking to other educators who resonate with the ideas, and that like by phone usually or Zoom.
When you started to answer, you said that there were things that you never had time for before. Was there anything else on your mind, or is this what you meant, the connecting with old friends and reconnecting with family?
It's actually that, really. I actually, when I was before this time, when I was running the school in person, I literally didn't have time to connect with old friends. And also stuff like baths and walks, like taking a warm bath, taking a walk, like it was to be, it's like so strange, but even family time with my immediate family, I never had time for that before. Sad, but like I kind of like my kids were in my school, but I actually didn't have any time other than the context of them being by my side as I did the school, did I have time for like family time and that, I guess, connection, you know, I guess connection for the sake of just connecting has been a real source of inspiration for me during these times that I didn't have so much time for before. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. I don't want to use more of your time because we've done the hour, but it was lovely to speak with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
I'm going to pause the recording, but I'll still be here. So
okay.